podcasts, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, of course, they're going to be, for the next hour, the views of Eric John Phelps, who has written a book called The Vatican Assassins. And the reason I've asked Eric John Phelps to be with us is because he is going to be speaking at the conspiracy conference. It's going to be on the June 7th and June 8th. That's just a month from now. And it's going to be in Santa Clara. And I believe it's at the Marriott Hotel. And if you're interested in knowing more about what's going to be going on there, you'll certainly want to call them. And their telephone number is 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844. But certainly, this whole idea of the elite, the Vatican assassins, is fascinating. Eric, how did you get involved in writing that story?
Well, Doc, it's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners today. I was damaged emotionally when I was 10 years old over the assassination of President Kennedy.
Right.
And I never really got over it with that traumatization. My dear fourth grade teacher, Ms. Beals, crying in a way we loved and was very fond of. And so I decided that someday I would find out who really did this, because I knew Lyndon Johnson was a liar just as a little boy, watching him on the TV as he was being sworn in as president on Air Force One on a Roman Catholic missile there. So over the years, I've conducted this investigation as to who did it and why. And to be able to prove that premise, I had to completely go through the history of the Jesuit order and what they had done for the last four centuries to make it believable that indeed Cardinal Spellman, overseen by the Jesuits at Fordham, in control of the Council on Foreign Relations, carried out the Kennedy assassination. So,
now what is the relations between the Jesuits and the Council on Foreign Relations?
Oh, yes. Joseph A. O'Hare is one of the most powerful Jesuits in New York City right now. He was the former president of Fordham University, and he is one of the men who helped put Michael Bloomberg in power as mayor there, and he is... Jesuit O'Hare is a CFR presider.
What is a CFR presider? Is that
a CFR presider is one who orchestrates and oversees various meetings. David Rockefeller is a CFR presider.
All right, certainly we know about, certainly associate the name of David Rockefeller with the CFR. After all, he was the assistant chairman there for 15 years. He became the chairman in 1965, or 1970 was the chairman until 1985. Now he's the honorary chairman. I've never heard of this judge, though. But this judge is also one of the leaders of the CFR.
Oh, yes, his name is Joseph A. O'Hare.
Okay.
If you Google O'Hare, that's O apostrophe H-A-R-E. And if you have a recent CFR annual report, you can find his name in that list of names.
All right, but we do have the annual report. I've been back to the headquarters there a number of times, and I get the reports, not infrequently, and so I'll certainly tend to look that up. But basically, what is his relationship to the Jesuit order?
Well, Joseph A. O'Hare is a Jesuit.
I see. He's a judge and a Jesuit?
No, he's a Jesuit. He's not a judge.
Oh, I see. He's a Jesuit.
He's a Jesuit priest.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment with Eric John Phelps, and we'll be talking about the Vatican Assassins. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Eric John Phelps, and he's written a book, and a very controversial book, but it's been around, and it certainly has been widely read and widely acclaimed by many people. It's called The Vatican Assassins. Is the book available in print at the present time now, Eric?
No, it's not, Doc. My third edition is only available on CD, but it's almost triple the length of the first edition. It's 1,836 pages with 760 pictures and portraits.
And it is available on CD then?
It's available on CD from me, so you can go to Biblio and order it directly off Biblio.
Order it off of who?
Off Biblio.com.
Off Biblio.com. Well, we'll get that information out a little bit later, but of course I've asked Eric to be with us this afternoon. He's going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference in Santa Clara. On the 7th and 8th of June, that's simply a month from now, it's at the Marriott Hotel. That's the Conspiracy Conference, and I will be there certainly on the 8th. I'm not speaking, but I'll have a table there, because I believe, of course, it's important that we have an outreach to people of all different ideas and beliefs and religions. And, of course, if you'd like more information on the Conspiracy Conference, the number is 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844, and it is Eric's Sydney position that the Jesuits play a very important part in many of the things that have happened in our recent history, and of course he has been examining the assassination of John Kennedy, and you feel that the Jesuits played a part in that?
Well, yes, I feel that the Jesuits, particularly the Jesuits at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., along with the Jesuits at Fordham, were the brains behind it, and they are the ones who oversaw Francis Cardinal Spellman, who was in turn the head of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta at the time, and the Knights then were involved in key positions of power to carry out the assassination.
But of course, wasn't this really, did it involve the Council on Foreign Relations and the Central Intelligence Agency?
Absolutely. I show in my book that the Archbishop of New York controls the Council on Foreign Relations, and thus the CFR controls the CIA. At the time in 1963, the head of the CIA was the Knight of Malta, John McCone.
Okay, John McCone, of course, a long time head of the Central Intelligence Agency. I was not acquainted with the fact that he actually was part of this Knight of Malta, which is an ancient secret society.
Yes, the Knights of Malta are the ancient crusaders.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Eric John Phelps. His book, The Vatican Assassins. And of course, Eric was pointing out that John McCone, that's John McCone, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, but also apparently a member of the Knights of Malta. And this is an ancient organization. It's an ancient secret society. You pick up. Tell us a little bit about the Knights of Malta.
The Knights of Malta were founded in 1099 in Jerusalem for the purpose of supposedly being protectors of the quote-unquote Christian people that would come there as for their visit to the Church of Constantine, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and of course where Christ supposedly was crucified.
Oh, no, but of course that was during the Crusades, and of course these were the Knights Templar you're referring to.
Well, it wasn't the Knights Templar, it was the Knights of the Order of St. John's of Jerusalem.
Right.
Knights Templar were founded after that.
All right, so this is this a separate order then, separate from the Knights Templar?
Yes, it's a separate order. It predates the Knights Templar.
All right, fine. So the Knights Templar, I think, was 1118, and of course, this Knights of St. John were, what, 1099?
1099.
All right, fine. So tell us a little bit more about them.
Okay, the Knights of St. John later became to be known as the Knights of Rhodes, and then later the Knights of Malta. And so as we refer to them today as the Knights of Malta, we are, of course, referring to the Knights Hospitallers. And they are crusaders whose purpose was to take Jerusalem for the Pope. And when they were ultimately defeated by, that wasn't Saladin, but it was Suleiman the Magnificent, they were ultimately driven or sent to the island of Malta. And so the Knights of Malta are now the high bankers. They control all the finances. They control the international intelligence community of the world for the benefit of the Pope, who in turn is controlled by the Jesuit general called the Black Pope, Adolfo Nicholas of today.
I see. But of course, then, do you think that the Black Pope, the head of the Jesuits, is more powerful than the Pope who reigns in Rome?
Absolutely. The Black Pope is his master, and the White Pope merely carries out his policies. The Black Pope is like the prefect of the Praetorian Guard that guarded and controlled the Roman Caesar. So the same identical parallel has been instituted today.
Well, now, how can we, our listeners out there, how can they document these things? Of course, they can read your book and they get the information. But, of course, where does the information come from that's in the book?
Okay, well, I document my sources in excess of 200 sources in my book. I have over 750 quotes. So that really I'm not in any authority, I'm merely quoting the authorities. And there are various different authorities, from Catholic authorities, Dominican authorities, Franciscans, as well as Baptists and Presbyterians and atheists and others. They all have a unified testimony once you examine their history.
Well, of course, the Jesuits have been around since, what, about 1500, somewhere in there?
They were started by Ignatius Loyola in 1534, but they were formally brought into the papacy in 1540 by Paul III.
All right, and so they were basically a organization whose purpose was supposedly to defend the Catholic faith and defend the Pope. Wasn't that the purpose, at least the stated purpose of the Jesuits initially?
Well, much more than that, Doc. Their purpose was, according to Wiley in his The History of Protestantism in Volume 2, the twofold purpose of the Jesuits was first to take Jerusalem from the Saracens, from the Muslims, and then their second purpose was to destroy the Protestant Reformation and reduce all nations back to the temporal power or subordination to the Pope of Rome.
And, of course, there really was this very effort, a very real effort to destroy the Protestant faith, and I know that was one of the purposes of the Jesuits was to, you know, bring everything back under the control of the papacy. And, of course, we can look back through history and we can see the influence of all of these various organizations, and, of course, you have the outer form of the Jesuits, but don't you have an inner fraternity of Jesuits who have a much different purpose than those people that we see. I mean, the Jesuit fathers, many of them are great and certainly very loyal and wonderful people, but would you say there's an inner core of the Jesuit that really few people understand what they're really up to?
Yes, I would. There are Jesuits who are completely ignorant of the purpose of the high Jesuits under the fourth vow. And these lower Jesuits profess the third vow. I mean, they have their loyalty to the Pope and they carry out things, but it's the top high Jesuits under the fourth vow who realize that, number one, they're Luciferians, who worship the devil, and their whole purpose is to reduce the whole world under the rule of a Pope of their making so that the world may be governed from Jerusalem, from the third temple, from a Pope of their making, who I believe to be the final Pope, murdered, come back to life as the Antichrist, and that the Jesuits indeed have brought him to power.
And you actually believe that one of the popes is going to be, sometime in the future, murdered and then brought back to life?
That's correct. The final pope, he's the final Roman papal Caesar. He will be murdered. He will receive a mortal head wound, according to Revelation 13 and 17. And then he will come back to life, and he will be the Antichrist, the eighth king, yet of the seventh, of Revelation 17, 10. And all this was made possible and brought to fruition by the Jesuit order.
Well, because many people, of course, think that the Pope might become this Pope, or some future Pope might become the false prophet. Because of course there is a unholy Trinity. Certainly on the dark side is that we have Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. They have of course Lucifer, and then they have the Antichrist, and then they have the false prophet.
Right.
Do you recognize this unholy Trinity? Is this a part and parcel of your thought process?
Yes, indeed. I believe the beast of Revelation 13, who's the Antichrist of 1 John 2:18, the Antichrist with the article in the Greek there, by the way, that is indeed the final pope, killed, come back to life, the old myth of the phoenix dying and coming back to life, personified and come to pass in this risen pope, and the false prophet, because he comes out of the earth, whereas the beast comes out of the sea. I believe this false prophet will be a Jew.
Well, of course, I'm sure there are many Catholics who listen to you. You would sorely disagree with you. Have you had, a great deal of opposition to your ideas?
Not very much, because, you see, I document it all. I show how the Pope considers himself to have universal spiritual power, universal temporal power. He considers himself to have the right to rule all nations, and he considers himself to be God manifest in the flesh. And that's why George Bush, when he looked into the eyes of the Pope, said he saw God.
I see. All right, fine. Well, of course, now, what part does this organization, does the Jesuit play in this move towards the one world government? Do you think that they are working very, very strenuously to bring about a world government?
Oh, my, yes. They've always wanted to reduce the world back to the Dark Ages. And there's a book that's been released several years ago called The 13th Century, The Greatest of Centuries, when it shows how the purpose of the Jesuits in the Vatican is to reduce the world back to the 13th century, when Pope Innocent III of 1215 or so was really the universal monarch of the world. And the Jesuits, because they've written all the high rites of Freemasonry, they control the Scottish Rite Freemasonry, Grand Orient Freemasonry, so all the top high Freemasons are subject to the dictates of the Black Pope.
Well, of course, traditionally, most people think that the Masons are the antithesis of the Catholic Church. In other words, the Masons are the enemy of the papacy, the papacy is the enemy of the Masons. Is there any truth to that, or is that simply to confuse us about what's going on?
On the lower levels, that's true, but that's simply to confuse us. For example, if you read David Yollop's work in God's Name, you'll see that the many, many cardinals were high-level Freemasons. If you read Craig Heimlicher's work, Blood on the Altar, you will read that Cardinal Rampollo, who was the Secretary of State to Leo XIII, he was a member of the OTO, like Aleister Crowley. So high-level Freemasonry, if you read Madame Blavatsky in her Isis Unveiled, she will tell you that all the high rites of Freemasonry have been written by the Sons of Loyola, and they have validated from even a Masonic sect, where the Jesuits wrote the top 25 rites of the Scottish Rite from the College of Clermont in Paris, France.
Well, of course, Madame Blavatsky was writing in the 1870s, 1880s, and that's when she wrote her major book, The Secret Doctrine, which was a favorite of Adolf Hitler's and really all of the occultists. So Madame Blavatsky wrote about the relationship there between Masonry and the Jesuits?
Oh, yes, I have it quoted in my book.
All right, fine.
She wrote The Secret Doctrine, Isis Unveiled, and I think I'm quoting Isis Unveiled in the book.
All right. Actually, she wrote two books, Secret Doctrine and Isis Unveiled, and they're both certainly the basis of so much of the modern-day occult writings and so much of the modern-day Masonry and Theosophy and Rosicrucianism and New Age and Lucius Trust, and they all, of course, go back to the writings of Madame Blavatsky.
Mm-hmm. And she was friends with Albert Pike. She was friends with the top American Freemason, Charles Southern. She was a co-Mason, so she was absolutely involved in what became later the New Age movement. And the Jesuit Teilhard de Chardin is considered to be the father of the New Age movement. He's also behind the hoax of the Peking Man and the Piltdown Man.
And, of course, the whole idea of the Piltdown Man scam was fooled scientists for 50 years. So anybody who tells me that science is accurate, I mean, here all the scientists in the whole world for 50 years believed that the Piltdown Man was the missing link and was actually a fraud.
Absolutely, totally a fraud. And Teilhard de Chardin, a Jesuit, was a part of it.
Right, and of course, wasn't Teilhard eventually excommunicated from the church?
Yes, but you see, that was the open policy. The Vatican always has an open policy, which is supposed to deceive the masses, but its secret policy was Teilhard did exactly what he was supposed to do, because each Jesuit is under the abject servitude of his master, and he will not disobey, be it his provincial or his novice master, whoever it might be.
And of course, most people who have ever studied the whole idea of the Piltdown Man have really felt that Teilhard de Chardin was actually, of course, one of the major forces behind this hoax, scientific hoax. Why? Because they had to disprove the Bible.
They had to
prove the man had been around for hundreds of thousands of years. The Piltdown Man was the link, missing link. We evolved from lower species. And it was all a lie. And of course, that was for 50 years. All the scientists in the world accepted that because the only alternative would be to believe that God created the heavens and the earth, and the story of the Bible is true.
Amen.
We'll be back in just a moment with Eric John Phelps, his book, The Vatican Assassin. Well, Eric, do you believe that Jesuits, what's the relationship to theosophy? What's the relationship to the Lucius Trust and certainly the modern-day Rosicrucianisms? And what is the relationship to modern-day Masonry? Do you believe that many of the Jesuits are actually working within the Masonic Church, working within the Masonic movement today?
Well, yes, I document it very carefully, that the Jesuits have written all the high rites, and therefore they control all high-level Freemasonry. For example, Joseph Redinger was a 33rd degree Freemason and a Jesuit priest and the founder of the Bilderbergers. So we have the Jesuit Masonic connection controlling the Bilderbergers. We have the Jesuit Masonic connection of Bishop Hilton Nilica, who was behind the Medjugorje fiasco. And he even designed his own symbol, half Masonic and half the symbol of the Jesuit order with the male-female rays of the sun. So the Jesuits are most assuredly controlling high-level Freemasonry. For example, in the Warren Commission, the Jesuits controlled 33rd degree Freemason Earl Warren, who was the Supreme Mason of California before he was appointed to the Supreme Court. We have 33rd degree Freemason J. Edgar Hoover, who was involved in suppressing evidence, covering up the slug that was found, the 45 slug in Dealey Plaza today. He covers up a host of pieces of evidence. And J. Edgar Hoover recruits many of his FBI agents from Fordham, from Marquette, which are Jesuit universities, as well as Notre Dame, which at that time was controlled by Theodore Hesburgh, a CFR member, and completely in the hands of the Jesuit order.
I see. So you feel then that the Jesuits were deeply involved with the assassination of certainly President Kennedy, but they couldn't have done it without the help of the CIA and the FBI, could they?
Oh, of course not. See, the CIA at the time was overseen or headed by John McCone, Knight of Malta. You have the FBI that was headed up by a 33rd degree Freemason, J. Edgar Hoover, who, by the way, was on the Council of the 33rd degree in Washington, D.C. Then you have the third in command, who was a Knight of Malta, named Cartha Deloach, who is a personal friend of Newt Gingrich and still alive. He was overseeing the FBI at the time. You have Henry Luce, who's a Knight of Malta. He's in control of Time Life. He purchases the Pruta film for $150,000. You have Frank Shakespeare, who is the head of NBC and also one of the heads of the Heritage Foundation. All these men are Knights of Malta. Lee Iacocca was a Knight of Malta. He was the one responsible for dispatching Carl Arenas to take the limousine to drive it back to Cincinnati to one of the Ford manufacturers there to get rid of all the primary strikes. All these Knights of William F. Buckley, another Knight of Malta, he was constantly advocating that Oswald was a lone assassin. So you have all these Knights in the press, in the CIA, FBI, doing everything they can to suppress the truth that Kennedy was killed by Cardinal Spellman, overseen by J. Peter Grace, who was the godfather of the children of Pat Robertson.
Well, of course, in my understanding, of course, Cardinal Spellman was very, very close to the Kennedys. Is that not true?
No, Cardinal Spellman was not the friend of the Kennedys. They disassociated from Cardinal Spellman in favor of Cardinal McIntyre, I believe, after the assassination.
You mean the Kennedy family did then?
Yes, that's correct. And Spellman wasn't there for the funeral of John F. Kennedy. He went to Rome, and he had a pretended funeral for Kennedy in the Vatican.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Eric Don Phelps, and of course he's going to be talking at the Conspiracy Conference a month from now over in Santa Clara. If you're interested in knowing more about that, of course you can call the Conspiracy Conference hotline, and of course that is at 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844. When are you going to be talking there, Eric? Are you going to be talking Saturday or Sunday?
You know, I don't know. Brian is going to give us the schedules, I think, when we arrive.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, you're going to have some great people there. Going to have our good friend Joyce Briley. Jim Mars will be there. Jim Mars has written a number of very important books going into the background of the secret government of the United States. And certainly Clifford Connachorn is going to be there talking about chemtrails. There are only one or two people there I didn't know. Barry Samus is going to be there. Ralph Everson talking on what's going on as far as masonry is concerned. So, I mean, it's a very interesting lineup. Certainly, I think the best lineup they've ever had. And so I think that certainly the fact that Eric is going to be there as well. Certainly, he's written a very, very provocative book that's been discussed all across the country on internet, alternative media. Have you had any opportunity to get on to the mainline media to talk about the Vatican assassins?
No, I haven't. There was a lady that called me from the Los Angeles Times a few years ago, and she was Japanese. And she had read in my book that I have said that there were no atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They were detonated on the ground and assembled by Pedro Rupi and various Jesuit physicists with the Japanese army overseeing it. And this was very intriguing to her, and so she wanted to interview me from the Los Angeles Times, and I made an arrangement for a time, and then she canceled it.
Well, tell me, of course, why do you think that there are no bombs, which we're told, of course, that the bombs have been were carried, you know, by these planes, and of course it had come from the carriers, and it dropped the bombs. You're suggesting that the bombs were actually on the ground there and were detonated?
I'm saying that the bombs that were dropped by the B-29s were magnesium flash bombs, and the magnesium flash bomb over Hiroshima was laced or had a slug of uranium in it. If you read Paul Tibbet's work, Enola Gay, they put the slug of uranium in it when it was in flight. And then the bomb dropped over Nagasaki had a slug of plutonium in it. And so that gave the appearance that when they did have an airburst there at 1,800 feet above ground, that with the coming down of the radioactive materials, it looked like there was an airburst of a nuclear detonation. But the fact was that Pedro Rupi, with his Jesuit physicists, one of them a German named William Kleinsorg, they were busy assembling these devices on the ground in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. All these devices, the pieces for these devices, have been provided by Lend-Lease through Russia, through to Korea, then into Japan, and then the Jesuits assembled them there, and that's why Nagasaki and Hiroshima were never bombed by that high-level Freemason Curtis LeMay, as he oversaw the B-29 and their mass firebombings of Japan, because these triggers were so delicate.
Well, now, Chris, how can you verify that this is what happened? What's the source of reference on that?
Well, I show in a couple of books how Pedro Rupi said that it looked like a magnesium flash in the sky. And the other issue is that there had never been any testing of any air bursting of any atomic devices prior to that time. And a maxim of war, especially for the Jesuits, those masters of war, because it's a military organization, you never use a weapon unless you test it first, exactly how you're going to use it. So for those reasons and others, I maintain, if you look at the pictures of the detonation in Hiroshima, it's obviously on the ground. There was no airburst. And if you look all throughout the web and try to find out in these nuclear books, atomic books, you will never find not one picture, of any airburst atomic device ever detonated as an airburst.
Well, of course, what we've seen, of course, we've all seen the pictures of the mushroom cloud over Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah, right. You have a mushroom cloud over it, but because of the ground detonation, it comes up off the ground, and then you have this huge cloud rising, same as you would have at Alamogordo or Amchitka or any other nuclear detonation on ground.
But, of course, has anybody who was involved in this ever come forward and said, you know, these were ground detonations?
No, but a Japanese physicist has come forward and said that Japan has been, was at the time, busy developing and had perfected the detonation of an atomic device. And I maintain that these Japanese army physicists were working with the Jesuits there in Hiroshima at a Catholic church, which was a ground zero, to detonate this device. And furthermore, five Jesuits surfaced from ground zero after the detonation in Hiroshima, unscathed and unhurt, and they attributed it to a miracle of the Virgin Mary.
I see. Fine. So you basically believe that this was then timed to coincide with the explosion there, of the dropping the bomb, the magnesium bomb, and then the ground explosion? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's right. When the magnesium flash bomb went off, then the Jesuits underground had seen the flash somehow and then detonated the device above them because they were shielded underneath, so the bomb would detonate out and up, but not down.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Eric John Phelps, and of course we're talking about his views of course, what's happened, and he believes, of course, that the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were, of course, not quite what we've been told, but of course that there certainly were atomic bombs set off in both towns, but he believes, of course, they were actually not detonated in the air. And now, could you explain to me just one more time what the scientists had said that led you to this conclusion?
Well, number one, there has never been any historic record prior to 1945 that any atomic bomb had ever been dropped and had an airburst, because we're told that those bombs had an airburst about 1,800 feet above ground. That was never done. Now, I know that the Vatican had successfully tested atomic devices by 1939, and Dr. Deagle will validate that. And I have a speech from Pius XII, who knew all about the effects of atomic detonations in 1942. So there's no question that they had detonated these devices prior to 1945, but there's no evidence anywhere that they had ever been detonated as an airburst, because these triggers are very, very sensitive. They're beryllium triggers, and one of the men involved in the creation of these beryllium triggers was a Jesuit, Michael Delisle Lyons, who, with another Jesuit from St. Louis University, had a Q clearance. So the Jesuits were involved in the building of these triggers for these devices.
And you're suggesting that the Jesuits were actually there in Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Oh, yes. You can find it that there was a... Pedro Rupi at the time was the head of the Jesuit community just outside of Hiroshima, and he had Jesuits in city at the time, quote-unquote, ministering there. But as I mentioned, five of these Jesuits emerged from ground zero after the detonation unscathed. So you know they were involved in it. And then to lie about it and say they're going to attribute their survival to the Virgin Mary is absurd. Further, Pedro Rupi was a doctor, and he was then able to give medical attention to all these poor, burnt Japanese people. This happened in 1945. By 1965, Pedro Rupi, for carrying out this mass murder against the Japanese, as well as for providing the foundation for the Cold War with the airborne nuclear war hoax, he was made Jesuit general in 1965.
And then he then became the Black Pope?
That's right. He became the Black Pope.
And is there any proof that he was actually there in Hiroshima Nagasaki
yes.
at the time?
Oh, yes. I have a book on that. The Jesuits by Alan Woodrow documents that he was there at Hiroshima at the time. But
hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Eric John Phelps, who has a lot of fascinating ideas and thoughts in his book, entitled The Vatican Assassins. And, of course, he attributes so many of the problems that we see today to the secret society, which is what the Jesuit order is in many respects. And, of course, we've seen this terrible recent tragedy of pedophilia and homosexuality within the Catholic Church. Well, I really, of course, think that this is a manifestation of the satanic forces that are working within all of our religions today, progressively undermining the existing religions, destroying the old traditions, certainly within the Protestant church, and I'm a Protestant. We see the change in the music in our churches. We see the change in the message, the Christian message that is being presented. We see an increasing effort within the Protestant church to begin to get into mysticism. Oh, we want to be able to experience Christianity. We want to be able to meditate and come into contact with God. Well, of course, what you're really doing when you're meditating is you're opening your mind up for a Luciferian, really, control. And this is what people really don't understand. There's a great deal of difference between prayer and meditation, and, of course, putting yourself into a semi-hypnotic state. Well, what part, certainly, did the Jesuits play as far as the assassination, in your opinion, of Bobby Kennedy or Martin Luther King or so many of the other prominent people who have been executed here in the United States? Did they play any part in that?
Oh, sure. They were behind the assassination of Malcolm X in 1965. Cardinal Spellman oversaw that with his New York Police Department and his FBI with the Nation of Islam, because, you know, Cardinal Spellman controlled the Nation of Islam through high-level Freemasonry.
Wait a minute. Cardinal Spellman controlled the this Nation of Islam, which, of course, was Louis Farrakhan's movement?
That's right. Louis Farrakhan is a high-level 33rd degree Prince Hall Wright Freemason. He was one of the assassins of Malcolm X.
Really, of course, that's a... We certainly see a lot of incredible things. Why is Louis Farrakhan always getting so much press? Why does Jesse Jackson get so much press? Well, Jesse Jackson is a high-level Mason and certainly a member of the CFR. That's right. Why they play him up all the time, and that's why he gets all these government grants. And what about Farrakhan? Where does his money and power come from? Is it simply because he's related?
Farrakhan is a servant of the Archbishop of Chicago, Cardinal George, right now. Farrakhan does anything he tells. He has an agent that goes sees the Pope. So the NOI and the Ku Klux Klan are all working together, and that's exactly what Malcolm X said. The NOI and the Ku Klux Klan have the same paymasters, and they're both Masonic. So we have Farrakhan, we have Al Sharpton, we have Jesse Jackson, all Freemasons. In addition to that, Barack Obama, all high-level Freemasons, working for the papacy, and they are in turn... Farrakhan being a part of the assassination of Malcolm X. Then you have the assassination of Bobby Kennedy in Los Angeles. That was carried out by the same apparatus that killed Kennedy, JFK's brother, because Bobby Kennedy wanted to stop Cardinal Spellman's war in Vietnam, which was then Cardinal Cook's war in Vietnam.
And, are you suggesting that Cardinal Spellman was behind the Vietnam War?
Why, of course. He called the American soldiers the soldiers of Christ. It was called Spelly's War for years. Spellman put Diem in power. And then when Diem became disobedient, they had him assassinated and continued on with the war under Nixon after they killed Lyndon Johnson, after they killed Kennedy.
Well, of course, most people believe that it was the CIA that actually killed Mr. Diem and Mr. Nguyen there in Vietnam.
The CIA was totally controlled by Cardinal Spellman. The CIA is a continuation of the Nazi SS that never surrendered, was rather brought in here under Operation Paperclip and the secret treaty of Fort Hunt, and many of them brought into the CIA, including Gestapo Mueller. Gestapo Mueller was in the CIA till he died, what, in 1972-73?
No. Oh, you're speaking of Heinrich Mueller?
Yes, head of the Gestapo.
All right, fine. And of course, there's some people who really believe that he was actually brought to the United States, Heinrich Mueller. And of course, he was the head of the Gestapo over there. He became an American agent after that. We do know, of course, that the Operation Paperclip did occur. We do know that the American people have never been told that literally several thousand Nazi scientists were brought to the United States against the law at the end of the Second World War. The reason we call it Operation Paperclip is because if you were in the military and there was a paperclip on one of the dossiers on a Nazi, you were never supposed to ask what happened. They were brought in, of course, to work on psychological warfare, to work on, of course, biological warfare, and, of course, on the space program. It's just Wernher von Braun. And the space program was largely the Nazi scientists. What people don't understand is that certainly biological warfare and psychological warfare were also many of the scientists. And how could you cover up Operation Paperclip? Well, the only place you ever going to hear about it was on the X-Files. They brought it out on the X-Files, but You control the media. You control what the American people. Then the rat line took many of the Nazis, certainly Martin Bormann and Dr. Mengele and,
yes.
and Adolf Eichmann and
yes.
Klaus Barbie. And they were all, and almost 10,000 other Nazis, high-ranking Nazis, were allowed to escape to South America. We know that there was, certainly involved the CIA, the MI6, and the Vatican at the time, didn't it?
Absolutely. And in fact, Lucidius Farrago, in his book Aftermath, said it was 50,000 Nazis they brought out of Europe. All this made a comp possible by the hierarchy of the Roman papacy, overseen by the Jesuits. In fact, I have a book written in German called The Flight, Flight from Nuremberg. And in this book, the author tells how Walter Rauff was escorted by Jesuits through the Brenner Pass into Italy. And Walter Rauff was the one working with Austrian Jesuits to bring many of your top Nazis out of Austria, out of Germany, into Italy. Once they were there, we were free, and then they could be repatriated wherever the Vatican wanted to send them. And in America, it was Cardinal Spellman who brought them all in.
Well, I think, of course, fortunately, we do have the Internet at the present time where people can check out the RAT line, R-A-T, RAT line, of course, the RAT line. And the purpose of the RAT line was to actually to take all the Nazis to South America. Oh, you assassinated a few of them, you did away a few of them there at the Nuremberg trial, but those were show trials.
That was right.
To try to make people believe that the United States government was anti-Nazi. What people really must understand is that American corporations, American banks, and high-ranking American officials helped to build up Adolf Hitler, and that's covered beautifully in the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. Why, we even have a letter I found among Colonel House's papers back at Yale University from Ambassador Dodd, the American ambassador to Germany at the time, and he's writing to Colonel House in 1936 saying, why are American corporations helping to build off the German war machine? Nobody here wants another war. We just got through with the one war, and now they're doing everything they can to build up the Nazis and the Germans in preparation for another war. And there's no profit to be made because of exchange controls. You can't get money out of the country. Why are they doing that? Well, of course, Ambassador Dodd didn't know that Colonel House was part and parcel of this whole movement. We were building up the best enemy money could buy. When you understand that, why so much of what has happened before and afterward and so much of what's going on today really makes sense. Where did the terrorist movement come from? It was financed by the CIA, the best enemy money could buy. Why is Russia increasingly beginning to rattle their sabers? Why? Because we built them up, gave them the financial wherewithal after the fall of Russia so we could have an enemy. Why are we building up communist China when they're threatening to go to war with us? Best enemy money could buy. And I'm sure you're well aware of all these things, aren't you, Eric?
Well, yeah, I mentioned in my book our Sino-Soviet Muslim invasion that they're planning. I go into great detail on that. With regard to Thomas Dodd was a Jesuit coadjutor. He worked for the order. His son, Chris Dodd, is another tool of the Jesuits, affiliated with Georgetown University. Thomas Dodd knew exactly what was going down. In fact, he brought the Nuremberg gun law over to this country
after the war,
and that became the foundation for the 1968 gun law here.
So all the Dodds are
working for the Vatican.
That was a different Dodd. That was Senator Dodd you're speaking of.
That was Thomas Dodd, Senator
right.
Thomas.
Right, but
Chris
he was
Dodd, his son.
But he wasn't the American ambassador to Germany in 1936, was he?
I think it was. There's only one Dodd, and that's Thomas Dodd, and his son is Chris Dodd.
Well, we'll check that. You could be right. I'll have to check that out and find out. I do have the letter, and any of our listeners would like to see that letter that was written by the Ambassador Dodd, and whether it's Thomas, perhaps it was Thomas, but Sydney, we'll be glad to provide that for you if you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It's amazing what you can find when you do a little research, and I know Eric has done a great deal of research, but all of the parts of the dot, all of the dots are there. You just got to connect them and begin to understand how we build up Adolf Hitler. And do you believe that the Jesuits played a part in building up Adolf Hitler?
Oh, absolutely. If you read the book La Popessa, you'll read how that friend, consort of Eugenio Pacelli, when he was archbishop there in Bavaria, he was a papal nuncio, he blessed Hitler and gave him a bag of money. So Hitler was brought to power by the Archbishop there, the Papal Nuncio. He was brought to power by Michael Cardinal von Faulhaber. Michael Cardinal von Faulhaber, the Archbishop of Munich, his canon was Canon Wilhelm August Petain. August Petain was the cousin of Heinrich Himmler, and Petain supposedly resigned as canon from the Archbishop there in Munich and joined the SS. So the SS was completely modeled after the Jesuit order. Himmler designed it as he would be the Jesuit general, and the top SS generals were his assistants, completely modeled after the Jesuit order.
And, of course, was Himmler tied in any way to the Jesuits
himself? Oh, yes, he was a Bavarian Roman Catholic, the most fanatical. And so his father, Gebhard Himmler, was the tutor for the Wittelsbach dynasty. And the Wittelsbach dynasty, like King Ludwig III and the Crown Prince Rupert, they were completely controlled by the Jesuits of Munich. The Jesuits then in control of the Church of St. Michael's and the Archbishop there, which is about 100 yards away from the Church of St. Michael's and the Jesuit Church there in Munich.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Mike on the line, but I'll ask Mike just to hang on for a few more minutes, and then we'll get to him. But I want to get as much information as we can from Eric at the present time. And he's done an exhaustive study as far as his evaluation of the influence of the Jesuit order, which in many respects is a secret army. And, of course, everyone pledged their loyalty. And, of course, the same thing happens with the Knights of Malta, the Knights of St. John. We find this, of course, with all of the various secret societies, the Rosicrucians, the Theosophists. What's the relationship between the Vatican, between the Jesuits and the Rosicrucians? Because the Rosicrucians actually preceded the Jesuit order for by 100 years. They came about in the 1400s, the Jesuits in the 1500s.
The Jesuits have absorbed all the secret societies, the Rosicrucians, Freemasonry, the Templars, the Knights of St. John. They have absorbed them all, and now they are under complete control of the Black Pope.
I see. So you actually think that the Rosicrucians are answerable, but do you think the average Rosicrucian has any idea that there's a relationship between their secret society and the Vatican?
Oh, no. Just like the low-level Freemasons, they don't know. Just like the low-level Knights of Columbus. I show that Joseph M. Tumulty, a high Knight of Columbus and completely beholden to the chief Knight of Columbus at the time, Flattery, Joseph McNulty was the secretary of Woodrow Wilson for 10 years. He was the real master of Woodrow Wilson, not Edward Mandel House. And this is the Knight of Columbus. So I go into this and show that indeed the Jesuits are controlled of the high Knights of Columbus, the high Knights of Malta, the high Freemasons. But the lower guys have no idea, like those poor 42 Knights of Columbus who were firemen, who were murdered on 9/11 by their own Archbishop, Edward Cardinal Egan, because he was the one behind 9/11. I show all that in my book.
Well, no, of course, you're suggesting that this certainly was not a terrorist attack at all, but it was actually coordinated by a cardinal?
Absolutely. Edward Cardinal Egan of New York City coordinated the 9/11 demolition through his Knight of Malta, who was the head of the CIA at the time, and he was one of the heads of the National Security Agency, who was trained by Jesuits at Fordham in a School of Foreign Service, and that man, a CFR member, his name is George J. Tenet.
But now, what about, of course, the planes that crashed into the building? How was that brought about?
They were brought about by George Herbert Walker Bush and his control of Evergreen Air, that they were fitted out from Evergreen Air, that they were remotely controlled, brought into that building to make it look as though the Muslims did it, so that they could justify a crusade against the Shia Muslims in Iraq and in Iran and in southern Lebanon.
And so you're suggesting this whole thing then is to precipitate a religious war against the Shia Muslims? And what about the rest of the Muslim world? Won't this involve us, if we do get into a war with them, won't this involve us with the Sunni Muslims as well?
It will involve us with the Sunni Muslims after the Shia are murdered, because the leader of the Shia is considered to be infallible and divine. And so there can only be one man on earth that is regarded as infallible and divine, and that's the Pope. And so they're removing the Shia people because the leader of the Sunni, he's merely a temple prince. And that's why the Sunnis and the Wahhabis are busy financing and helping George Bush in this American and British crusade against the Shia.
No, you're speaking of George W. Bush, not his father, George Herbert Walker.
Well, George Herbert Walker, he's a Knight of Malta, just like his brother Prescott Bush Jr. And
George,
they were both bosom friends with the Supreme Grand Master of the Knights of Malta, Andrew Birdie. In fact, had him in the White House in 1991. So, yes, they are most assuredly, George Herbert Walker Bush was involved with Evergreen Air in fitting out the Skywalker, Sky Warrior that crashed into the Pentagon, and the 737s that crashed into the World Trade Center.
All right, fine. So George Herbert Walker Bush, don't you have to be a Catholic, though, to be a Knight of Malta?
No, the British branch is historically Protestant, but they are united with the papacy, have been united with the papacy since, I think, around the 1980s. Henry Luce, for example, was a Knight of Malta, yet he was openly and professed a Presbyterian. Same way with Alan Dulles. He was a Knight of Malta, but he was openly a Presbyterian.
And Alan Dulles was a Knight of Malta?
That's right.
And so now Alan Dulles, for our listeners, of course, was the man who created the council. Pardon me, he was actually instrumental in creating the CIA. He was also instrumental, of course, in the Council on Foreign Relations. He and his brother, John Foster Dulles, were with Colonel House at Versailles back in 1918, 1919. And,
uh-huh.
Of course,
John Foster Dulles, his son, Avery Dulles, is one of the most powerful Jesuits in America today. Avery Cardinal Dulles at Fordham University.
He is actually a cardinal today, John Foster Dulles' son?
Yes, sir, at Fordham.
All right, fine. Well, see, there are a lot of things that most people have never heard. And of course, now why don't you tell our listeners how they can get a copy of your book?
You can get a copy from, go to my website, VaticanAssassins.org, and just press on the first button on the left. There's ordering information. I have distributors there, and if you would like, you can go to biblio.com and order from there, or you can call me at 610-589-5300, and I can take your order. But it's a CD, and it's not a book.
All right, fine, and then people would actually have to pull that down, copy it on their own, is that right?
Right, they have permission to put it in book form from the copyright there.
All right, fine. So our guest has been Eric John Phelps. Remember, he's going to be speaking over at the Conspiracy Conference on the 7th and 8th of June over at the Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara. And if you need more information, going to have a great lineup of speakers there, all coming from different points of view. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Mike, who's been hanging on the line patiently. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, hi, Stan. I wanted to ask Eric a question back to half an hour ago regarding the church being the phoenix that rises up out of the ashes. Is he still with you there?
Yes, he is.
Yes,
uh-huh.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Do you suppose that the phoenix is actually the Egyptian system cloaking itself in the Catholic Church these days?
Absolutely.
And,
yes, sir, because the essential religion of the Jesuit order is Egyptian, the mystery religion as transmitted from Babylon to Egypt. So absolutely, sir. It is the ancient Egyptian religion, as reflected in Freemasonry, that the Pope stands for, and when he is killed and comes back to life, that will fulfill the story of the phoenix, that will fulfill the story of cutting down the Christmas tree and bringing the Christmas tree back into your house and putting a light on top. It all symbolizes the killing and bringing back to life of the final Roman Caesar, Roman Pope, to be the world dictator for 42 months.
All right, fine.
And the killing, would that have been what happened at the exodus of the Jews from Egypt?
No, the
killing of the phoenix.
This is the exodus of the Jews from Egypt. No, that's not anything to do with it. This has to do with, in the book of Revelation 17:10, that there were seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and one is yet to come. And the five kings, the five Roman Caesars that had fallen, because they're kings of that final world fourth beast, which is the Roman Empire, those five kings that had fallen were Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Vespasian, and Titus. The one that existed at the time of the revelation was the Domitian, and then the seventh one is yet to come. When he comes, he continues a short space, but then he's killed, he receives a mortal wound to the head, according to Revelation 13, he comes back to life, and then he's the Antichrist for 42 months.
Okay.
Anything else, Mike? Does that answer your question? Okay, I guess that was Mike's question, and of course our guest here is Eric John Phelps, and we're talking about his book, The Vatican Assassins, and of course it's a fascinating book. We actually carried it for a short period of time and went out of print. Do you think you'll ever get this thing back in print again, Eric?
I don't have the money to do that, but maybe somehow it might be possible.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, I want to appreciate so much with you being with us, and I'll look forward to actually meeting you there. I'll be there this Sunday the 8th. I have a granddaughter who is getting married, so I have to go to that marriage there on the 6th, and I'll be flying back on the 7th, and we'll be with you on the 8th of June, so we'll look forward to being with you there. At the Conspiracy Conference there in the Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you, Doctor.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Eric John Phelps, and fascinating insight and man who's done a great deal of research. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Eric has written a fascinating book, a controversial book, and I'm sure it will offend many, many people, but I believe that the satanic forces have infiltrated every aspect of religion. Certainly the Jesuits, they've infiltrated the Catholic Church, they've infiltrated the Protestant Church, they've infiltrated the Jewish religion, they've infiltrated the Muslim religion. But of course, I do believe, of course, that the Christianity or Judeo-Christian is the true religion, and we are waiting, of course, for the return of our Lord. But in the meantime, there really are satanic organizations out there. And, of course, if you've read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you know, of course, that there are people who actually worship Satan. And, of course, you'll see the quotations from Albert Pike and from Manly P. Hall, and specifically from Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who wrote The Secret Doctrine, who wrote the Isis Unveiled, whose disciples included people like Arthur Conan Doyle, Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, William Stead, who was one of the three original members of the secret society that Cecil John Rhodes, four original members of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created, which became the Council on Foreign Relations. If you doubt that, it's covered in Professor Quigley's long-suppressed book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. If you were going to read one book, after my book, of course, Brotherhood of Darkness, it would be Tragedy and Hope, and even if you don't read the whole thing, and only skim read it or index read it, why, of course, the book is something you need to have for ready reference. Long suppressed by the people who work within the shadows and now available. And even you can get, if you'd like, an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells you how his book was actively suppressed. The last thing they want is for the American people to learn the truth. Now the book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, is available from Radio Liberty. As the Anglo-American Establishment, which is the other book that Professor Quigley wrote on this secret society that became the Council on Foreign Relations. If you'd like to check that, what I'm saying out, read pages 950, 951, and 952 of Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. You need to understand that there really are secret societies, ladies and gentlemen. They're working at the highest levels of our country. They involve us in war after war. They're intent upon destroying the very fabric of our society, the morals of our society. They are working in concert with their friends to change the very structure of the United States, to bring about a world empire. They're using the financial and military power of the United States to dominate the world. But, of course, eventually there's going to be a tremendous backlash. As a nation, we're bankrupt, both morally and financially. We're having to borrow several billion dollars every day just to pay our bills, and before long, the whole house of cards is coming, tumbling down. So you better begin making your preparations and understanding that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And you are witnessing the actual prophecies of thousands of years ago. So you need to understand the biblical prophecies. You understand what's going on today. You need to hear my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, so you can get the book. And then, of course, we recommend the forbidden knowledge and the syllabus that goes with that. My talk on the planned police state, and the syllabus that goes with that. Sustainable development, the road to world government, and the syllabus that goes to that. Iraq, the untold story, and the syllabus that goes with that. And begin to understand what's really going on today. I mean, we are looking at the possibility of very real famine in the United States. People say that couldn't happen. Well, of course, when I tell you that oil was going to close at $123.80 today, a lot of people will say that couldn't happen. Why, there's no shortage of oil, and there isn't. It's all contrived, but it doesn't matter. It's going to have an impact on you and your life and your ability to drive your car, because they want to get you out of your car. And they do not want you to have the freedom of the ability to go where you want to. So pray for America. I number 1-800-544-8927. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.